Right.
Okay, so I'm sitting in the Summer Hall courtyard, and I am sitting with Robert McDowell, who, when I met him just now in the press office, I asked him a question. Of all the questions I've asked this Fringe, I got the single coolest answer. So, Robert, what is it that you... what is your connection to Summer Hall?
Well, I created it. I suppose it's my... it's definitely my vision. I own it with my brothers. And we are the only private multi-arts centre, and we are the biggest private arts centre in Europe.
You just said, I own it, when we were talking. And one of the big things that you're trying to achieve at Summerhall, and doing a fantastic job of so far, is to try and build the root system of the Fringe into Edinburgh and to bridge the gap between the 49ers, who are the regular Edinburgh theatre goers, and the three weekers who come up for the Fringe. How's that going?
Well, roots. When the circus leaves town, all those people who have become arts junkies can still come to Summer Hall and shoot up.
So, without wanting to look too far into the future, what's coming up?
Right, that's a great question. This time next year is the centenary of the beginning of World War One and the beginning of the first half of the 20th century, all those years that we are forced to think about and to recall, the period of the greatest innovation in all of the arts, the period of true avant-garde, but also the period out of which came internationalism, the internationalism that we still work with and rely on today, but it's a depleting resource. It's also a huge period of cathartic, traumatic disaster for the world, and which we have to learn from. Why we have the European project for European cohesion and convergence, which is the leading example of internationalism in the whole world. If it's faltering, it's in crisis. Partly its crisis is because it's only based on politics and economics, not on culture. We now, as the culture of Europe, has an obligation and a duty to reinterpret and recall the first half of the 20th century, beginning next year with August 1914. And so not only us, the international, other venues, but us especially, we have to think strongly and deeply how to bring out those lessons that we need to remember to help and refresh the sense of internationalism, that international problems can only be solved by international solutions, not the rising nationalism that we're seeing in Europe today.
But isn't there a counter-argument to the unionist agenda that says that Scotland would be better able to participate in the cultural unification of Europe and the cultural integration of Europe as an independent country?
Well, some artists, Scottish artists, undoubtedly feel that. We only have about 40,000... 45,000 artists of all kinds in Scotland, dancers, theatre and so forth. In fact, we have as many artists exactly as we have churches remaining in Scotland. It's not really very many. Most Scottish artists, or a lot of Scottish artists, aren't here. They're in London or Berlin or somewhere. But that Scotland's involvement, Scotland's contribution, Scotland's culture, or its connections to culture in other countries, is completely independent of whether we're a sovereign nation or not. Sovereignty's got nothing to do with that.
And Edinburgh, as you were saying earlier, is one of the few cities in Britain that is a true European and international crossroads. So there must be huge scope for helping to build the infrastructure for that.
Yes, I suppose that's true. And in my data would strongly suggest that the central belt of Scotland containing the two second cities of culture in the UK, both of whom can almost claim equally to be second cities after London, second cities of culture. The central belt of Scotland is the eighth most important cultural region in Europe. We don't market ourselves on that basis, we don't promote it on that basis, but that's what we are. There are more people going out to culture in Scotland than the total of all the visitors to the museums of France in a year, plus all the visitors to all the museums of Italy in a year.
One of the things that strikes me about particularly the big four venues at the Fringe, or the trad big four, is they don't really operate much of a curatorial standard other than bums on seats. You're taking quite a different approach at Summerhall.
They do and they don't, but their programs are very repetitive on the comedy side, because that programming is driven by the four major comedy agencies. And the big super venues, with the exception of C venues, are 70% dominated more or less by comedies, mostly stand-up, but not entirely stand-up. Some of it's certainly quite profound, but a lot of it could be classed as obvious and cheap entertainment. But it gains huge crowds. But they're not our audiences. We are a comedy-free zone here at Summerhall. We focus much more on theatre and on the visual arts, and we have a very good balance between performing arts and visual arts. We have about 200 productions and events. We have something like 30 art shows and 80 theatre productions.
It seems to be sort of a cultural bubble that's expanding, and it's presumably going to have to burst at some point with the Fringe. That at one side of it, it's something more akin to the Leicester Comedy Festival, with, as you say, you know, a microphone and a stand-up telling jokes and stories and talking about themselves. And on the other side is the Theatre Fringe, which obviously Fringe Review is intimately concerned with. Is that sustainable? Is the Fringe sustainable as a single entity?
it seems very sustainable. It's economically and otherwise is growing massively. There is nothing within a country mile of the scale and size. There are 4,000 events. However hard you beat yourself up to go and see as many things as you can, you will not be able to see more than 2% of the whole festival. That's extraordinary. I won't even be able to see everything in my own venue, which is mad.
One of the nicer things you said was that, like Cambridge, Edinburgh is a city that doesn't have too much irritating architecture. And looking around us, we have some splendid examples sitting alongside some tireder-looking buildings. So what are the plans for Summerhall?
We are in what was the Royal Dick School for Veterinary Studies. For 100 years, this was a veterinary school. It's roughly the size and shape of an Oxford or Cambridge college. It's got three courtyards, a whole bunch of buildings around that, about 500 rooms. The earliest original buildings, there's a church from the 1840s. Then the main building was built during World War I, the extensions during World War II, and then we have two large buildings built in the 1960s, one of which is a seven-story tower. We like these buildings. We like the kind of unglamorous chicness of them, or the glamorous unchicness of them. That's what artists love. They love to work in buildings which have a history, which have character. We believe in adapting the arts to spaces, not in adapting spaces to the arts. We want the arts to be in the real world, not in some kind of artificial ghetto, anodyne, white
South Bank
boxes, yes, or what Saatchi did to the Chelsea barracks, you know, not Chelsea barracks, the Chelsea Chelsea pensioners' home, turning the way in which the art world turns things into white rectilinear spaces. White galleries and white museums, by the way, having first originated in Nazi Germany, we eschew those values. We also are the antidote or the opposite of specially built buildings which look like crashed spaceships, as if contemporary arts are some sort of science fiction or futuristic enterprise that needs to be in weird places. No. All our artists, and from so many different countries, they love the edginess of this, not post-industrial space, but academic space. And the whole space here, all these rooms, all the people who work here permanently, we have a population of about 300 who work here all the time, dedicated to the arts, research, and education. We are a cultural village within Edinburgh.
I think it's certainly true that, and I know that Lynn Gardner has said that Summer Hall is now the focal point for the Fringe, and it certainly makes a huge difference having a courtyard space for the interplay between spaces and artists, and the exchange of audiences between shows that they might not otherwise see. I'm thinking how to put a question mark on that, but
I don't think what she said was that you could spend 60% of your whole time just here in Summer Hall. There's so much to see of great quality. We're not exactly the focal point, but we are the place where the artists and the actors and the producers and people, the sort of inner core of the Fringe, do come a lot. Because they can meet each other a great deal more efficiently than going to some of the super venues, which are just jam-packed with a kind of hedonistic Freshers Week type atmosphere. Here, everything is less commercial, maybe less pretentious, less pompous, or whatever. Just more real. I don't know. People come here and they just feel that this is what the festival used to be and what it should be.
2.5 blocks south of George Square and many miles better. We always like to finish these interviews by asking our interviewees if there is a show that they should that they would encourage their audience to go and see after they've seen their show. So after people have managed to see everything at Summer Hall, having managed to bend time and space to do so, is there anything elsewhere that's really caught your eye?
Well, of course, there are wonderful concerts. There's a couple of great Beckett plays. There are experimental works of which are very challenging, some good physical theatre elsewhere. There's also at Patterson's Land a wonderful programme involving Scottish National Opera, Scottish National Theatre and other leading companies, Patterson's Land being the newest venue in the festival. I think when you focus on great quality, you find also correspondence between different shows. They seem to share aspects of the same themes. So you can come here and can discover that you can put your finger on the zeitgeist of what is going on in theatre.
Robert McDowell, thank you very much for speaking with Fringe Review.
Thank you, sir.
There you go.